and welcome to Too Many RPGs, a show about RPG shows. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Ethan. This is a show where we talk to creators and fans of actual play podcasts and streams about why they enjoy them. I have lost my question.
Again?
Where did it... It's all over the floor. Aw, man. The question's all over the floor.
Oh.
Gross.
I didn't know questions did that.
Sometimes, when they leak out of my head and out of my mouth and onto the floor, apparently. So this week we're talking about Urban Shadows, which deals with sort of like the spooky, like, you consider it with like urban fantasy and that sort of thing.
Yeah, like monsters and stuff in the city.
Yeah. So, in an urban fantasy setting, what kind of creature would you want to be? Because you got like, traditionally you got like vampires and werewolves and blah blah blah, that's a cell. What would you want to be?
I mean, I don't know.
Wizard? Fairy?
I'm a spreadsheet wizard, but I'm also kind of a real-life fairy princess, so...
You could probably do both. You're the spreadsheet fairy.
I'm the spreadsheet fairy princess. What would you be?
I would. I always forget that we turn these questions back on myself.
Yeah. Oh, I might be some kind of fish person. Like a mermaid or a person with gills or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay, some sort of sea fae.
Yeah.
Who does spreadsheets.
Who does spreadsheets. That's the urban part of the urban fantasy.
you came to land because spreadsheets are really hard to do in the sea.
Yeah.
I would be the guy who makes really good segues all the time for every scene.
Speaking of making good segues, let's introduce Dave. Hi, Dave.
Hi, that's me.
Sanguahona is an Urban Shadows campaign on Off the Table.
Yes.
And it's interesting because it's two shows in one campaign, yes?
Yeah, it's really interesting. It originally started as just one show on the Off the Table channel playing Sanguahona. And then after the first season ended and we decided to pick it up for another season, our MC, Summer, she decided to expand the game into including two different groups that would basically be in the same city at roughly the same time. And, like, there's a little bit of a time difference, but we're talking hours, not years, months, or days. But they're doing their thing, we're doing our thing, and occasionally there's stuff that crosses over between them. But we haven't quite yet had any player crossover. But we should be seeing that for the first time this upcoming Tuesday, which is going to be the 16th of April, which is going to be the season 2 finale.
Ooh. So those of you who listen to the podcast on release day, we love you very much. Go tune into Urban Shadows tonight and
see us cry.
Check out that crossover. And you are, Dave, are a cast member on one of them, yes?
Yeah, I was in the original season one. I wasn't actually part of the original cast, but I was brought on when we needed to fill an extra player vacancy, and I've been with the show ever since. The original group is in the later segment because both of the shows are on Tuesdays. We have the first one, which is the new players, and that is Sanguahona the Sprawl, whereas the original cast plus one replacement that happened during season two is Sanguahona the Drag. And we keep on dragging Summer for naming us that.
The show may be called The Drag, but you guys sure aren't a drag.
But why is it called The Drag?
Honestly, like... I don't know. And I'm too afraid to ask.
So a drag...
So Summer, if you're listening, why?
So a drag is often a term for like a long stretch of road. Like...
Okay. I was thinking like a drag from a cigarette. And it was very noir.
You want to know what we do on this show? We make bad decisions and cry about them.
Like, oftentimes my parents will call, like, the main road in a city or town, like, the main drag. And, you know, drag racing is a thing where you drive cars really fast illegally along a long stretch of road.
That actually sort of makes sense rather than the way I was interpreting it, which was like a bore.
Is there a very long road that shows up in Sanguahona the Drag, or
Not particularly. One of the actually coolest things about it is that at the very beginning, Summer put in just an incredible amount of work utilizing all of her amazing graphic design skills and actually made a map of the city, which is incredibly detailed, because it's a city inspired by, you know, all of the big cities in California, like San Francisco, and it is an absolute mess in its organizational structure.
Mm-hmm. That's how San Francisco works.
Yeah, the thing is, she translated that into a map that we have on our Roll 20 for the game, which we can all see, and then it's broken down into segments for which of the factions in Urban Shadows controls which area and which ones are contested. Which, if you're not familiar with Urban Shadows, there are four different factions, of which, depending on which playbook in this Powered by the Apocalypse system you use, you are assigned to one of these factions. There's Mortality, which is focused a lot on basically humans that are still fundamentally all human. You get people that, like, are the aware that know about the existence of monsters, or the veteran who have experience in combat and sort of deal with stuff, or the hunter who is just a human trying to go after and or seek vengeance for wrong that was committed against them by the supernatural. You have the knight, which are like your vampires. I believe your ghosts are in that too. Your werewolves, sort of like the traditional spooky ones. Demons, for example.
I love you. You sound like a salesman to me right now. Like, you got your vampires, you got your ghosts.
And let me tell you, there's more. You also got your demons. You want some demon magic? Boy, you can have it for the small, small price of joining that faction. Oh, wait, no. Actually, knight is... I'm sorry. Demons aren't knight. They are actually in one of the other factions. I apologize for my foolishness and getting mixed around, because this is actually a big plot point this season. Sort of the fact that the demons this season are now taking main control of the Wild faction. Wild is a lot... It seems to be a smaller faction in terms of playbooks that are available for it, but the main ones include your demons and your fey. Sort of the ones whose goals are sort of unknowable by humans. You can't really predict what a demon necessarily is trying to get in the end. You can't understand what the motivations of someone from the Feywild are. And
yeah, these are like the monsters that like to mess with humans.
Oh yeah, they absolutely are. And Summer is, we'll get into it more later, I'm sure, but Summer is definitely making sure that she's wielding the demons especially like a cudgel this season, just smacking deals into people's faces. It's very well done.
So what's our last faction then? We have the knight, the mortal, the wild, and what else?
And the power. These are humans who have sort of tapped into the magical aspects of the world. They're like your wizards, your people who barter in valuables, and your oracles that can see into the future and predict what's going to happen. These are the humans that have touched and claimed magic as part of what they're wrapped up in. And it's honestly interesting to see how these different factions play off each other. And you don't necessarily have everyone with a player at a time, but getting to see how they interact when you do or with the NPCs can be a really fascinating part of the game.
Very cool. So let's start with, because we have two groups, so let's start with the first one. Let's start with the Sprawl. Who are they? What are they up to?
Okay, well, a lot of this is based on season one stuff, so I'll give you a brief rundown of the characters in that season before we jump into a brief summary of season one.
We have to start with the Sprawl season one. Sorry, yes.
The Drag, but it wasn't called that at the time. We used to be interesting, but we have Summer, obviously, who is the MC, and she is doing a fantastic job of bringing the city and the NPCs to life. Then we have Frank, who is played by Other Doc, Jim. So Frank is veteran. He was someone who was in the Iraq War. He's an older doc. He's a middle-aged older doctor that is honestly almost a father figure to a lot of the people he meets. He helps and goes out of his way to care for other people, etc. You also have Del, played by Katie Face, and she is an oracle. She can see the future, and she is someone who predicted the person who was bringing a treaty to the different factions. She saw their death and didn't say anything. And so that was one of the interesting things in season one that tied into the story, but a little more on that later. We also have Mavis, played by r_omulus, aka Rachel. Mavis is a werewolf, young, sort of brash, but very kind-hearted overall, and is trying to sort of escape her werewolf curse because she was born with it and does not want it. Then we have Vincent, who is an old wizard. We're talking like way older than anyone would probably want to be, like 200 or something, I don't know. But he was the type of person who would be willing to play off other people and mess with others in order to get what he's after. Which is awesome because Vincent was played by Eric Vulgaris. So Eric just brought an amazing atmosphere to that first season with how he took Vincent, and he just made decisions that went against basically what the rest of the group was doing, and ended up greatly affecting the end result of the season with his choices. And then I was playing the autistic Faye Selvin, who is basically an art student and is trying to get by, I guess.
I love that you're like, he's the Fae. He's basically an art student. Like, all art students are in fact creatures of the Fae.
Are they not?
I mean,
if you studied arts, then you are associated with Arcadia.
I don't know if I can talk about this anymore. You STEM folks. You STEM folks aren't allowed to hear our
that's
you're being, there's like a little light blinking next to Lauren's desk that's saying, do not speak of it.
Understandable.
Don't share this information with the mathematicians and the engineers.
But a lot of these characters ended up getting tied into the main plot of the season, which was that, as I mentioned earlier, there was a character who was trying to end up making a treaty between all of the factions to split up the contested territory so there wouldn't be infighting and stuff. But she was murdered, and nobody knew who murdered her, and it was coming to the council where everyone was going to vote on the treaty. And essentially, it all built up and up and up as time passed and situations got messier and messier to this final vote. And some of the things that happened along the way was we met Mavis's dad, who is the chief of police, and even though she blamed him for abandoning her, we found out that maybe he's not as bad as we thought, because her mom actually prevented him from coming to see her. And we found out so many things. Del, with her visions, getting tangled up in the life of Andrew, a vampire, who, I'm just gonna be honest, Katie and Summer have this dynamic where anytime they make two characters, they end up 100% of the time just falling in love. And Katie refused this originally at first, because when Andrew was presented to Del, Summer made it clear that she was going to try to, and I quote, twilight Katie into falling for this vampire boy. Katie refused for one session. That's it.
That is 100% their friendship.
They're dating now. Andrew and Del have been dating between the seasons. But that was just a time and a half to witness.
So what I'm hearing is there's a very simple problem, but it's being confused by like 15 layers of character drama.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
Welcome to anything on Off the Table.
I think that's half the magic of the place, honestly. But probably the biggest thing that happened character drama-wise, as you were mentioning during the season, was Vincent kept on playing off people, and although Frank saved his life from Vincent getting shot in literally the first episode, Vincent played his cards with the right people and ended up getting a strong foothold in the city by betraying Frank and having him killed. And the last scene we had was Anna Guajona, the powerful vampire leader, the most powerful person in the city. She basically founded the city, taking a gun, talking to Frank, and then Frank being shot by her so he could protect Mavis.
So let's talk a little bit about the kind of like player trust you gotta have and like agreement and stuff for one player to be like, okay, I'm gonna make this decision and it's definitely going to murder your character. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, it's wild. And it's what's amazing is the fact that you can have a table where, honestly, half of the people, I hadn't played with Jim, Rachel, or Eric going into this game. And Jim hadn't played with, I don't think, any of us in a long-form campaign or anything. But going in and finding a group that you have an understanding at the beginning. You have these safety rules in place, such as X card, lines, and veils, and the discussion between games about what's going on, so you can make sure that you're never pushing too hard or crossing a line. And it was talked about after almost every session to just check in, hey, this is the direction we're going down right now. It seems we're still going in that direction. Do you continue to be fine with it? And even in a group that has a lot of trust with each other and we knew that this was going to happen, it didn't make it hurt less. It wasn't like you had to surprise people with the fact that, oh, Frank is getting killed at the end of the season. What a twist. No, it built and it happened naturally in the game and the fiction. Everyone saw it coming, the player saw it coming, and he okayed it. We were checking every step of the way. Is this something that you are okay happening? And Jim is someone who is an absolutely amazing player, and I would highly recommend that you join his games if you have the chance. But he was able to let go of this character that clearly meant a significant amount to him because he felt that it is what the character would do. It fit with the fiction and his character. And even in that, he was still okay with it because it's obviously more complex than just one being okay with it and it making sense in the fiction or for the character. There's a personal attachment, and talking with him afterwards and stuff and seeing how he was dealing with that sort of thing, even if you know it's going to happen, is something that when you have the right group with the right levels of trust and you know that your players care for your the other players and MC care for your safety, is something where you can go and work with each other to create incredibly dramatic stories that can be very painful in other circumstances if you don't have that group.
Yeah, that's really, and I mean, Jim and Eric are both like really top-notch players, been playing lots of games for a long time, so I can, you know, I can see why that worked so well, that dynamic worked, and they probably both enjoyed the hell out of it the whole time. But that's only season one.
Oh no.
Yeah,
we have two seasons, so
two season three shows.
Yeah, two season three shows.
What happened? How has this affected season two?
Well, the treaty didn't pass in the end, and one of the reasons that it didn't pass was because Anna Guajona killed Frank. Frank had one of the, it was a very narrow margin, and Frank had one of the votes that could have thrown it to the other side, and having him out of the way ended up causing Anna Guajona to split the city up and destroy the treaty and thus try to snag more power. A lot of the Fae actually ended up going back to Arcadia. There are only about a dozen of us left in the city now. The demons are basically in charge of the Wild faction for the most part. They're running their drug business on the streets, not even hiding from citizens who sometimes see dark shadows with wings flying overhead. And you have the wolves who the vampires turned on and cast out almost of the Night faction. You had Frank, regular Frank, mind you, who died, but a version of him that was split off from himself when he traveled through Arcadia. and half of himself got trapped there. We met that version of Frank in season one, came to San Guajona and is living there in season two, and he's searching for his daughter, who he went to Arcadia in the first place to try to find.
Okay, wait. So...
Frank is an incredibly in-depth character, and it's hard to summarize everything about him.
So Frank that died was not the real Frank?
He was and wasn't. So one of the weird things is if you go to Arcadia and you're not Fae or you're not bound to them in any ways, it's incredibly dangerous, as you would expect, you know, Arcadia to be. And he sort of got split into two. One of his parts, one of his halves, his more... The way Jim is playing it is there's... Both of them have ties and, like, they overlap some, but the original Frank was someone who was very kind and was generous and gave from himself and cared, and that was his primary driving factor. Whereas this new Frank is someone who's a lot more thinking rather than acting based on how he feels. And it's interesting to see this dynamic between the characters play out, because now we have a Frank that was a dad almost for several of the characters last season, now at sometimes being a right asshole. Sorry if I'm not allowed to swear. Okay.
I always think it's funny everyone assumes that this isn't a swear show.
Okay, well, he's sometimes a right asshole. It's the best way to put it.
All right.
So there's no Frank Prime.
Not anymore. That one was, the one we refer to as Frank Prime was killed.
Frank Prime, okay. Okay, so this is Frank 2.0 then.
That's actually how we refer to him, yes.
New Frank getting stuff done.
New Frank Kudis. But it's interesting because, unfortunately, Eric was not able to come back for this season two. But we got a new player who is playing the character Joy Spinelli, who is a demon, played by Where's My Dingus, aka Dingo. And she's immediately tied to the whole demon side of this wildness. And there's a lot of interesting character drama from that. For example, her roommate is someone that has ties with Del and has a complicated relationship with... There's a lot of romance-style drama that always happens between Summer and Katie. And this show is about as wild as you can get, because I think three characters have had romantic-ish interactions with Katie's character. This time, three NPCs.
Is there, do you guys have a chart? I know for one of the shows they had a chart of the romantic polyhedral.
The complex love polyhedrals.
We don't, but we probably should. Because besides the fact that Del is dating Andrew this time, we also have the fact that this season, because she's felt very alone and abandoned, she ended up cheating on Andrew with Riley Leach, who also boned Fatima, who is a person that Mavis had a crush on first season that I accidentally sent to Arcadia at the end of the season because she was trying to help cure Mavis's lycanthropy. And then we also have it's just a mess.
It's just a lot, and we don't want to give away too much.
Is this a soap opera? Like, this sounds like a soap opera.
It is 100% a soap opera.
Have you watched Off the Table? That, like, every show is a soap opera.
Look, Ethan and I met on an Off the Table show. That was not a soap opera.
Okay.
That was old Off the Table.
That was
before the soap happened.
Before we started scrubbing down.
Anyway, yeah, so that's what's going on is now is that you're kind of dealing in the drag now is you're dealing with all of this soap opera-ness and Frank 2.0.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about...
The sprawl.
The sprawl. That's what it's called. Tell me a little bit about the sprawl.
I'm not as familiar with this game, unfortunately, because I haven't been able to catch all of the streams, but essentially it boils down to there are these four characters that are all, again, doing their own thing in San Guajona. We have the wonderful character of Gabriel Espinoza, who is played by Jolie. And Jolie has brought Gabriel Espinoza to light. They are a fantastic role player and has brought, let's see, Gabriel is a ghost. His past is that His family is an extremely wealthy one, and his fiance was actually an activist. His fiance named Hassan, and unfortunately, due to, I believe, an accident, Gabriel was killed. And not just killed, but, like, gone missing. So Hassan has been searching over and over and continuously for Gabriel, not giving up, and Gabriel has tried to reach out to Hassan through the show, but there has been almost a force field wall blocking him from getting anywhere close. And a lot of that character is trying to explore the city and find out if there's some way that they can reach out and get back in contact with Hassan. We have Lauren, that salty ginger, playing the character Piper Cassidy. She's a hunter who had, I believe, her brother attacked by demons. And so now she is going and hunting them. And she's very gung-ho about it at times. But, like, on the drag, it's not like romance isn't a thing that happens. And Lauren has been flirting with, or rather Piper has been flirting with, some of the most powerful people in the city, such as Nadia, who is a vampire that has taken a large swath of the city under Knight's control, away from Anaguahona. And Piper is, you know, vampires are chill with her for the most part. She's intimidated, but also not necessarily, you know, she's just gonna flirt with one of the most powerful people in the city as awkwardly as you possibly can.
I mean, checks out. Sometimes you just gotta flirt your way to the top.
I mean, yeah, it's
not in real life. I don't recommend that, but in role-playing games, in fiction.
Because trust me, if your MC is anything like Summer, they will eat it up and make just a gigantic, wonderful drama piece with it.
Yeah, and so there's Lauren, there's Jolie. Who else is there?
There is also Barnaby Blacktree, who is played by Strider Heap. And he, if I'm remembering correctly, he hasn't been around as much the past few episodes. But he essentially is, I believe, a dealer in artifacts. I am honest, I can't see everyone's playbooks and I feel really bad. But essentially, honestly, I feel really crappy because I don't know that much about his character. And he's not in the group chat, so I didn't get to see the giant post wall that everyone made about their characters. Because we have a giant group chat for everyone.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
How else would you keep track of the polyhedrals?
Yeah. Oh, he is the scholar. So Strider plays Barnaby, and Barnaby is someone who knows stuff. He's studied the supernatural, for lack of a better way, sort of regards it as something to be learned from and observed and sometimes manipulated. He's crafty, almost not in, it's a little reminiscent of Vincent from season one, and that definitely adds a bit of a dynamic and a twist sometimes to the sprawl game. And finally, we have Azra Zane, played by Rye Cabaret Dreams on Twitter. And Azra is a construct, essentially. They're using the playbook, The Vessel. They were built, and instead of, like most other playbooks, having corruption moves that bring you slowly closer to darkness, they have moves that slowly bring them towards being a real person, almost, despite this construct nature. And Azra was basically, I'm hesitant to use this exact phrasing, but like almost a fighting robot, because obviously way more than just a robot, but they were built to fight.
Battlebot.
Yeah. But they were built to fight and they were good at it. And they escaped the person who basically controlled them for most of their life, the puppet master, and has been trying to move on and become their own person. And there's a lot of interesting character journeys as you're seeing various parts of different backstories being pulled in, and Summer does a masterful job of taking this and giving hints of characters in your own storyline and also people that are important in other people's storyline and mixing them in with the ones that are important with yours. So you may end up meeting someone that's very important to another PC that you didn't necessarily know about before then, and seeing all of this come together in a great tapestry, because Summer is absolutely amazing. She has made so many NPCs for this game, and all of them are incredibly interesting and have their own goals and motivations that they'll work for. And seeing how everything fits together with her utilizing player character creations for NPCs, as well as people to fill in the roles in the city themselves, is absolutely incredible. But one of the big things she's been doing this season has been pushing deals, and demons are known for deals. That's sort of their thing. And Gabriel took one up that involves bringing Azra to the Puppet Master and doing a number of other things, and he has to do them in 24 hours, or else they'll lose their soul. But also, if they do successfully complete it during those 24 hours...
Well, don't tell us. Okay. Don't tell us, it's a secret.
Okay.
It's a secret, we gotta give people something to come into, right?
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
So, to find out, watch Urban Shadows tonight.
Well, it did already happen.
we gotta give people something.
Watch the stuff earlier.
Yeah, because of course, this, your season finale is tonight.
Yeah, it's gonna be a time.
or in some period of time before.
Well, tonight, if you're listening, because of how
time works,
we are on
date of recording.
We are in the past.
Speaking to you, hear us in the
future. So it is tonight.
But we're talking about the present.
Yeah, time.
Time is not something that exists in podcasts.
It doesn't.
No. But yes.
Or space.
I mean, yeah.
There's no space in podcasts.
It's very cramped. Okay.
Yeah. No time. No space.
Where are podcasts?
When are podcasts?
That?
How are podcasts?
That's, why?
How do podcasts?
How are podcasts? Everyone asks, when's the podcast? Nobody asks, how's the podcast?
It's doing fine, actually.
Yeah.
Last time I checked, they're doing all right. They're struggling, but you know.
I mean, it's a tough life. Life's a struggle. Yeah.
Does that mean our podcast's alive?
Yes. Your podcast has come to life. It's a real person now.
Oh no.
Our podcast is a year old now, so.
Honestly, that's
amazing.
Our podcast is a toddler.
Oh gosh. It's going to be getting into its terrible twos soon.
Yeah. Oh god, no. We have one more year of that.
Okay.
I don't like this comparison.
We'll stop then. So, how do both, besides, like, so you said the player characters haven't interacted yet. So, what is the interaction between these two campaigns, if any, other than it just happening in the same city?
Well, one of the big ones is one of the NPCs, for example, Riley Leach, is very involved in both Del's life, as well as has been actively flirted with by Piper. And sort of seeing everything that's going down, it's almost like, of all of the chords, he's the strongest one that ties the two games together. Sort of seeing the swap between the games, you still usually get at least some Riley Leach content, and that's because Summer actually adores him and is trying to convince us all he's an amazing person, even though none of us believe it except Dingo, who, as I mentioned, plays Joy Spinelli, or Spaghetti if you prefer.
So, yeah, so there's Riley, but, and also, I guess, this, all of the faction.
Oh, yeah.
Does this have faction turns the way something like Stars Without Numbers does, or is it just kind of like the things that affect the factions in one game affect factions in both games?
It's mostly the latter, from what I understand. I don't profess to know all of the MC rules and stuff for how to run Urban Shadows, but I do know that the way that people interact in one game can affect the others, and you see a lot of parallels. Like, Gabriel has a deal, and so does Frank, but Frank's deal is also directly tied to one of his objectives is getting the wedding band from Hassan, Gabriel's fiance, and seeing like ways that the shows cross over. And Gabriel has a I'm blanking on his name, but one of the characters that was a previous flame of Del, that is making a reappearance and helping her out more this season, is someone that both Frank and Gabriel have a connection to through their deal. And the way that everything is sort of playing off each other and seeing how small little things affect the game, like Frank convinced Hassan to give up his wedding band and convincing him that this was something that was preventing him from finding Gabriel, and seeing like the way that that could interact with how Gabriel might view seeing Hassan without that wedding band on and potentially feeling like Hassan had moved on. And the way the characters and their backgrounds and the way Summer is pulling their strings interacts with each other, and it may not be super obvious because you could go into the sprawl and watch it and enjoy it for the sprawl. You could go into the drag and watch and enjoy it for the drag. But seeing both of them, you can see these little strings that are being pulled on and making figures in the other game dance like marionettes. Even though Azra would probably dislike that comparison, being that she basically was one for a long time.
Why is this game so important to you?
I think it's really important because it's been really interesting not only showing or getting to see an amazing story unfold through the other characters and see Summer just absolutely on her BS with making drama and dangerous situations for characters to get into and just running Urban Shadows in an incredible way. But it's also meant a lot to me because of my character. As I mentioned, Selvin is autistic. That's a way that I can sort of show off a kinder sort of autistic that a lot of other media doesn't portray, oftentimes viewing autistic people as robots. It's allowed me to show the fact that honestly that's not a true fact, and that autistic people are alive and can absolutely care a lot. It's just brains function differently, and it's been a lot of fun to sometimes just play up the way that Selvin interacts with his environments from a sensory perspective. And even though it might not mean a lot to other people, it's very nice to sort of express that in a game as well.
Have you played an autistic character before?
No, and this is the first autistic character that I have, and being how I create OCs based on myself, there are definitely autistic traits in some of the other OCs I created, but this is the first one that is in my head canonically autistic, and I want to be very public, and at the beginning of every game I introduce him as an autistic Fae, because you don't really see any portrayal of neurodiversity in role-playing games, in my opinion, and I felt that this was an opportunity to not only portray that neurodiversity, but do it in a way from the perspective of someone that lives with that aspect of neurodiversity as part of their identity, and showing a different aspect that a lot of mass media doesn't necessarily cover for autism.
Yeah, you see that a lot in TV shows a lot. Like, there are characters that lots of people are like, oh, I think this character is autistic, or, you know, I think this character is on the spectrum. And the writers are always like very like hands off about it.
Yeah, because a lot of the ways that autistic people are portrayed in media is sometimes very intentionally stereotypical in ways that demean their humanity. And there is a wide variety of people that are autistic, and you really only see one type that people ever presume are that in TV shows, and then even the writers are like, oh, well, we're not going to say it because then people would actually have a reason to give backlash to us.
So you get to kind of really control the narrative. And of course, you know, Sylvan isn't like an autistic stereotype either. Sylvan's just kind of one kind of autism. Yeah. This might be a personal question, you don't have to answer it, but like, does Sylvan's autism like reflect the way you experience autism, or were you trying to do something a little different?
I was trying to stay grounded in my experiences, but also not 100% just play myself. For example, a lot of my special interests lie in math, science, and engineering, whereas I changed Selvin's to expressing himself in ways with his special interests being art-centric, which is something not 100% familiar to me. I changed the way he perceives the world in some sensory areas, focusing in on how he views some senses versus others that are different from me. But a lot of the core experience of having these aspects that sort of stand out in my head that I can apply to a character, like, it allows me to sometimes just take time and dive into the specific actions a character is doing, like how Selvin just pulls his wool coat down heavier over his shoulders because the pressure is more comforting to him. And it's not something that you see a lot of these traits for how people interact with sensory experiences in other media types, that I can actually have a chance to verbally describe what he's doing and why he's doing it.
Yeah, can you give us some more examples of that? I'm interested.
Yeah. For example, one of the big things is auditory. So Selvin very frequently is listening to music, even on a quiet street night, because it helps keep him centered from the distracting sounds around him. Sometimes, especially in a city, a quiet night can be anything but quiet, especially if you're having a rough sensory day. And having the music and tapping his fingers along with it and stimming helps him center himself. And sometimes rubbing his fingers against the fabric of his coat as a tactile experience to help ground himself when there's a lot of chaos happening around. It's a lot of things that aren't really, I'm trying to figure out the right word, because it's something that is inherently common in people with neurotypical identities like autism that you don't really think about if you're not necessarily someone who has sensory issues. And just these ways that people go about interacting with their senses, with their environments, with not being able to read situations and stuff, you can play up for laughs a lot in a TV show, but there's very real and somewhat subtle ways that it affects people in real life. And it's been really cathartic in a lot of ways to be able to play a character like that in a role-playing game.
That's really awesome. Yeah, I haven't heard of any other kind of, like, I don't even think in television that there are a lot of, the only one that I can think of is the Sesame Street character.
Yeah. I mean, props to them, honestly, for doing that. From what I hear, it's a good representation too.
Yeah. Yeah. They really like, I think the puppeteer is actually the mother of an autistic child. And so they really went with, like, lived experiences of all of that. But I mean, besides Sesame Street, that's the only kind of really positive and clearly, like, the showrunner said, this character is autistic.
Yeah.
Representation of autism that I can really think of. I don't know. I don't watch a lot of television, but, like, certainly not in the RPG community and not much elsewhere.
Not gonna lie, for someone who isn't necessarily familiar with, or even just is dictionarily or, like, diagnostically familiar with autism, it's very different from a lived experience. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges, that you don't see a lot of people undertaking it, because sometimes disability inclusivity is lagging behind in some areas, and especially in ones that are more unique lived experiences, where it's hard to, from the outside, to capture what it's like to live with a brain that's wired differently. And it's okay that a lot of people don't try, and it's okay if people that aren't disabled end up wanting to play neurotypical characters and stuff. But I felt there was an opportunity to do something that really hadn't been done and that I wanted to see more of and make it myself.
Yeah, I think what's cool and good here is that instead of trying to get a bunch of neurotypical people to do a good portrayal of what's going on, and this is, like, a strength in actual play as a medium, is that we can create representation for ourselves by playing these characters. And so this show has given you a chance to that you as an autistic person can be like, here is an autistic character that is based off of my experiences, so that other, you know, other autistic people who maybe want to watch can then see themselves in something that they don't usually get to see themselves in. Have you heard any stories about like people saying like, oh, hey, I really appreciate Sylvan is around because I can see myself in that? Or,
I mean, not particularly. It's Off the Table is still a relatively small channel, and you only get so many viewers on a show, and then only so many actually comment in the section about it. But some of the other experiences that overlap with other parts of neurodiversity, I've seen people in the chat be like, yeah, I can very much relate to this specific area that Selvin is going through right now. And some of it has been sensory stuff. Some of it has been awkward social situations amped up a little by his inability to interact socially as traditionally as other people.
I always like when people build characters around themselves and create representation where there is none. Do you think this will make you want to play more autistic characters in other games?
I think that I definitely will come back and build other autistic characters, but there is sometimes a comfort in not portraying autism, because one of the things that is very on my mind with Selvin is very much how would an autistic person like myself react in this situation, and thinking about and processing like, okay, what would this sensory experience that's happening with these whispers in my head, how would that affect how I am dealing with not only my sensory stuff, but also the world around me in social regards as well, because sometimes you just gotta shut down in those situations. And probably my favorite roleplay moment in that game was when I nearly cried roleplaying an autistic shutdown from overstimulus and pushing through it for too long. And it meant a lot to me that I could do that in a game and feel perfectly safe with the players at the table and show a part of myself and take control of it in that way.
That's awesome. I'm really glad you got to have that experience. Man, role-playing games are so good.
They are.
And I'm really glad you got to share that experience with us.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. So the reason I've been kind of trying to like block off spoilers is because your season finale is tonight.
Yes.
Tonight, if you're listening on release day, Tuesday the 16th, on Off the Table, starting at...
Well, the first game starts at 7 p.m. EST. Because I missed last week, we will be seeing Joy and Selvin both show up in the earlier session, causing some extra trouble for those people in all likelihood, as well as Summer trying to figure out timelines, doing a little bit of catch-up as the season ends up wrapping to a close by the end of the night, which the second group will hop on at 9-ish, 9:30, and then we will wrap somewhere around 11:30 for both groups, I believe.
So you're not running a 6-hour stream with 10 people?
No, not a 6-hour stream with 10 people. I know that's been done, and that is always an incredible feat when people pull that off, but... 'Cause
that'd be a lot. That'd be a lot.
I think what's likely to happen, don't quote me, I mean, you can put this in the podcast if you want, but what I think is going to happen is the Sprawl group plus Joy and Selvin is going to be going for a couple hours, then Joy and Selvin will continue into the drag where the other people come in and the regular Sprawl people go out. So then we have the drag cast going for a while, and then as things build, it is likely that the Sprawl cast will join us as things build to a final conclusion in the last portion of the night.
Oh my gosh.
That's gonna be a lot of really tricky planning and...
Yeah.
If anyone can plan out to deal with this, it's Summer. She...
Yeah.
It's Summer. Amazing. With her wall and with her push tacks and the strings. And...
Basically.
I mean, just from a logistics standpoint, oh god, when I did the meat grinder game on Tales from the Grim, it was a lot of, like, people waiting in chat and being like, okay, you're up, get into Zoom right now. That's going to be a great time. If you're listening on our release day, you can check that out tonight. And if not, you can check out the VODs on Off the Table, which is where you can find all of the Urban Sprawl.
Yeah.
Urban Sprawl, sorry. Urban Shadows. You can find all of the
Urban Shadow Sprawl drags.
Yes, all of them.
And so, yeah, as Lauren mentioned, you can catch the VOD, video on demand, on off_the_table on Twitch. But if you're after recording and you're all caught up or something, or you just want to see what more Urban Shadows looks like, not only is Lauren, who plays Piper, running one of the games on, I believe, Grimjack's channel.
Tales from the Grim.
Yeah, so Tales from the Grim, she is going to be running her own Urban Shadows game. But if you want to stick with the San Guajona goodness, we have a special announcement. In that over the summer, there is going to be the game San Guajona The Claiming, which is set in the 1890s during the oil rush in California. And it's going to be the very early days of San Guajona.
Ooh, is this an exclusive announcement that you've just made for us?
Yeah, and while Summer is going to be out having a baby and taking care of a wonderful sweet bab, we are going to be having a different MC, that being done by Matthias, who is a longtime member of Off the Table and is an excellent MC in his own right. And it's going to be very exciting to see what happens with that game and where it goes. Nothing is finalized yet, but it is planned for, and expect to see news drop for that more as time goes on.
Wonderful. And do you think that then in the fall there will be more San Guajona for season 3?
We are not 100% sure, but I know a lot of us are keeping our fingers crossed.
Wonderful.
Nope, just everything explodes. The city's gone.
Honestly?
I mean, that's how Summer started at her campaign, her D&D campaign, so that doesn't mean anything.
That's true.
It's been going on how long now?
A year and a bit, yeah. Anyway, thank you so much, Dave, for being on the show. If people are listening and are now huge Dave fans, why wouldn't they be? How can they find you?
You can follow me on Twitter at CCDASH2224. You can also find me every other Friday. Actually, it's probably going to be every Friday at this point as we move to wrap up our season on Off the Table of Monster of the Week. We're in our third season. And if you thought Selvin was one side of me, you could see the emo other side with Lucius, the monstrous. Also, I am going to be running season 2 of Masks on twitch.tv/katieface, in which you can see our young intrepid heroes in Masks' planned obsolescence try to find out how to maybe save Katie's character from being a bad guy.
Ooh.
And then for a public announcement, I guess, we're going to be having another show on Katie's channel of Monster of the Week. And we're still sorting out details for that, but I believe you can expect it on Monday nights.
Very exciting. All right. Thank you so much. We will talk to you soon. And y'all should talk to Dave because Dave is great.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Theme music!
Thank you to Dave for showing us around San Guajona, Jeff for writing the music with me, and you, the audience, for listening. We hope you liked it.
If you would like to be on the show or have a creator in mind that we should contact for future episodes, you can tweet us at TooManyRPGs, or you can find Lauren at JL_NiceGirl.
Or Ethan at SuperRobotBear. If you like this episode, please leave us a review on your favorite podcatcher and recommend us to your friends. It really helps us to spread the show to new people.
Where do you go when there are too many RPGs? Because there's definitely too many RPGs. Too many RPGs! That's where you should go! Yeah! Too many RPGs, that's us.
You said too many RPGs so many times.
That's where you're supposed to go. Too many RPGs.